You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the National Football League podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio in Leeds at the United Kingdom, and joining me from the US capital this morning, Washington DC, it's Gil Alexander, as ever, on the line stateside. First of all, good morning to you, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. I know you're gearing up for a big weekend, best man at a wedding, Gil. The nerves, the tension rising stateside, no doubt.
I'm just happy that someone chose me as their best man, Dave. I didn't want to go through life not having that experience, so I'm good now.
That's tomorrow, Gil. Last night, we saw Jacksonville beat Tennessee by 19 points to 13. Jacksonville suddenly on the radar for the AFC South title. They seem to have their franchise quarterback, Blake Bortles, in place now. And even though he's not the finished article yet, he still makes some elementary mistakes at times. He is improving, progressive quarterback, and he looks good. He's got a strong arm and clearly fearless.
Yeah, I mean, I think Blake Bortles has, you know, proven the Jacksonville Jaguars to be somewhat astute in picking him as the first quarterback in his particular draft. They're going to be growing pains, and he's certainly gone through some, but they're in a very weak division. It's anybody's division. Any team can still win that division, and I think he's about where he ought to be progress-wise through the first couple seasons of his career. I think they're very happy with that pick, and, you know, there are going to be warts for sure along the way, and he's not out of the woods yet, but as I mix metaphors, by the way, left and right. But they'll be good. I just don't know that they're headed for the playoffs this year quite yet.
And let's get stuck into this weekend's slate then, Gil, and we'll start with the Denver Broncos at the Chicago Bears. This is 6 p.m. here in the UK. The Broncos 20-21, the Bears are 20-23, and this spread is currently the Broncos plus 1 at 10-11, the Bears minus 1 at 10-11. Denver, they've lost two straight now, but still stand atop of the AFC West at 7-2. Chicago putting a run together now, Gil. They're 4-5 in the NFC North. In the early part of the season on this podcast, you referenced on numerous occasions, Gil, that Denver were a paper tiger in your opinion. And after that big win against the Green Bay Packers, I think many people were possibly questioning that assertion. However, I'm not saying they would have been, but possibly. However, their results recently in their losses against Indianapolis and Kansas City have proven, I think, you to be correct in that assessment.
Yeah, I think I was questioning that assertion after the Packers game, let alone other people. You know, after their bye week, Peyton Manning came out and just was fabulous. The whole team was fabulous against the Packers in a game at the time that was between undefeated. But yeah, I mean, we've seen it since. Peyton Manning is about 150 years old, apparently. He has a problem with his foot, plantar fascia problem. And this is Brock Osweiler's team now for the near future. Brock Osweiler, who has thrown, I believe, a grand total of 305 yards in his entire NFL career. Keep in mind, in contrast, Peyton Manning has thrown for 305 yards on 93 different occasions, including the playoffs. So you are getting a neophyte, someone we just talked about, Blake Bortles. Well, Brock Osweiler, despite being in the league for longer than Bortles, has logged far less time behind center. And so Denver's getting a pretty unknown quantity in Osweiler for this game against the Bears.
How little faith do you think Gary Kubiak has in Brock Osweiler? Because we saw last week, or we've seen the last couple of weeks now, the deficiencies in Peyton Manning's game, whether that's solely down to the injury is open to question. But Osweiler's not been in there the past 2 weeks. Do you think that Kubiak hasn't got faith in Osweiler, or has he just been intimidated by Manning's pedigree?
I think it's the latter. I think this actually, if Gary Kubiak were to be honest, which he would not be, but if he were to be honest, I think this is actually the most excited he's been since being the coach of the Broncos. Because I think with Manning, he was not able to run the offense that he wanted to run. Now with Osweiler, you're going to see a lot of rollouts. You're going to see a lot of short passing, a lot of bootlegs. I think these are the types of things. And an emphasis, by the way, on the running game, which is the big question mark, I think, for the Broncos here. It's one thing to emphasize the running game. It's an entirely different thing to know whether or not you can actually be effective, because to date, the Broncos have been completely ineffective in their running game. Now, the question becomes, is that because Peyton Manning's been a statue back there behind the offensive line and has not really allowed the running game to establish itself, because defense is sort of key on Manning staying in the pocket at all times. So I think Kubiak, to answer your question, I think this is exciting for him because now he gets to put his stamp on things. And the question is, you know, to what extent will that work the first time out?
What do you think, Gil? Because the Chicago Bears are rolling a little bit now. John Fox and Adam Gase appear to be getting things together in Chicago right now. And having both worked for the Broncos franchise, they'll clearly know what to expect, I think, going into this matchup. How do you see the matchup, yeah, Gil?
Well, I'll tell you, last week somebody asked me on another podcast who I thought was the most underrated team in football, and I chose the Chicago Bears. I think there's something about them that was under the radar, and in the last 7 weeks, it bears out in the numbers on the defensive side of the ball. The Bears, before the last 7 weeks, and over the previous two seasons before that, had been known as one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Well, over the last 7 weeks, they've only given up 22.1 points per game, and they are allowing opposing quarterbacks just a 48 total QBR. That's scored out of 100. So they have played really solid defense. And to answer your question, I think the Bears play very well against Brock Osweiler. Now, the Broncos defense is certainly going to pose some trouble for Jay Cutler. Cutler can be loose with the ball. We know he's very volatile. But I like the Bears here. If you're asking me where I lean, it's not going to be one of my five picks this week. But if you're asking me where I lean, it is to the Chicago side of the ball, because I do think the Bears defense has really been the unit that no one has noticed. And those numbers bear it out. They've been really, really good over now almost a half a season, the last seven games when you extend it that far back. And Broncos will be able to do some stuff on defense. They get Aqib Talib back. But I like the Bears here when forced to make a pick. Jay Cutler, 82.2 QBR since the beginning of week six. It's the second best mark in the entire NFL behind just Drew Brees. So the Bears, very sneaky on both sides of the ball, getting it done. And I think that continues on Sunday.
The Bears, the pick at minus one. And I think just one final point here. A lot of people seeing it as a positive, Brock Osweiler coming in at this juncture for Peyton Manning. My question would be, Osweiler's been in the league a while now. Gil, why has he not been a starter before?
Well, he's been behind Peyton Manning. So, I mean, there's no way he could have been a starter in Denver. But why hasn't anybody else picked him up?
Yeah.
I don't know that he's... You know, when he came out of college, I think you look back at that kind of assessment, like what kind of prospect was he out of college? And he was a guy that was going to be drafted, but he wasn't setting the world on fire. So I don't know that this is a guy that people have been coveting all along. We'll see what we have in Osweiler. I think he's largely an unknown quantity still.
Okay, that's the Denver Broncos at the Chicago Bears. 6 p.m. on Sunday. At 9:25 p.m. UK start time for the Green Bay Packers at the Minnesota Vikings. The Packers even money on the money line. The Vikings 5-6. And this spread is set at 1 currently. The Packers plus 1 at 10-11. The Vikings minus 1 at 10-11. A crucial divisional game in the NFC North, this one, Gil. Before we get stuck into the matchup, has there been any line movement stateside?
Yeah, it started out as a pick'em, and now the Vikings are a one-point favorite. So there's been movement, but not really any significant movement, some money on the Vikings. And that's where I go. That's where I lean. And it's going to be one of my picks. I'm taking the Vikings. Yeah, it's the 6-3 Packers, the 7-2 Vikings. I am done not respecting the Minnesota Vikings. And on the flip side of things, I think we got some issues with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. That's not a sentence that I ever thought I'd say. But the loss of Jordy Nelson before the season, has really proven to be a big one for the Packers. Those receivers are not getting any separation for Aaron Rodgers. And it's funny, the Rams last year, let's take the Rams defense. When they went after Peyton Manning, they had a game against the Broncos, and they really got after Peyton Manning. And the Broncos with Peyton Manning were never really the same since. This year, the Packers played the Rams, and the Rams really got after Aaron Rodgers. And you know what? Even though the Rams didn't win that game, the Packers have never been the same since. Aaron Rodgers was blitzed prior to that Rams game a few weeks back on just 19.6% of snaps. And he had a big passer rating, 125.9, all that during that span. So that's scored at a 158 passer rating. So 125 is very good. So only being blitzed 19.6% of the time. The Rams blitzed him 49% of the time that game. They forced two interceptions. And ever since then, they really created a blueprint against Aaron Rodgers. He's been getting blitzed since then 39.2% of the time. And his passer rating has plunged all the way down to 89.9. Now, that's not QBR. That's passer rating out of 158, a strange scale we have. So he's been very mediocre, very un-Aaron Rodgers-like. And I think Minnesota, who has some really good young defensive players in Everson Griffin and Harrison Smith, a safety that will just destroy you, I think they're going to get to Rodgers. And I think that's where the difference in this game is going
to
be.
The Vikings minus one at 10 to 11. And Gil, just to reflect on Green Bay's three recent losses, the road games against Denver and Carolina, losses there forgivable. It's the home game against the Detroit Lions last week that many will focus on in the lead up to this match, because you've mentioned the Vikings there, young, talented defense. For Green Bay not to put points on the board at home against the Detroit Lions has to be concerning going into this week's fixture.
Has to be, especially when you are going to face, a defense in the Vikings that has really been great on all cylinders. Look, we're going to learn a lot about the Vikings over the next 4 weeks. Not only do they play the Packers here, but then they go at Atlanta. They have a home game against the Seahawks, and then they go at Arizona. So this is a stretch in which, you know, during which we'll learn much about the Vikings. But, yeah, I think based on that performance, and again, no team is as good or bad as they are in any one week. I think that's a good staple to live by when handicapping the NFL. So I don't think the Packers were as bad as we saw last week. But they're on the road at a division rival that's going on all cylinders. And we haven't even mentioned, of course, the great Adrian Peterson, who now, after week one, when he only gained 31 yards in week one, he now stands on 961 yards rushing. He has been every bit the Adrian Peterson that we have come to expect. And that's the first task for the Packers when facing the Vikings, let alone have to worry about the other side of the ball. So I really like the Vikings. I mean, the Packers, yes, they're the team that jumps off the pages. Oh, it's the Packers, and we think about them as this great team. But they've got some chinks in the armor, and I like the Vikings here.
Yeah, me too. I like the Vikings. And just one final word on Aaron Rodgers. You mentioned his level has dipped recently, but he had to pass the ball 61 times against the Detroit Lions last week, and that's never going to be sustainable in the long term, Gil. And every time I see Eddie Lacy in the backfield, he looks to have put on more weight. I think he's eating himself into oblivion at the moment, Eddie Lacy.
Man. It is really true, and it's really tough to watch. Mike McCarthy, for what it's worth, says that James Starks will get the first set of downs in the backfield for the Packers this week. Eddie Lacy will get the second set of downs. That's another way, Dave, of saying I have no real running back that I like right now. And the other thing, you know, I mentioned Aaron Rodgers with the receivers not getting any separation. It bears out in the numbers. He had 10 touchdowns on passes of 20-plus yards downfield last season, including an NFL high 7 to Jordy Nelson, who I mentioned earlier. He just has 2 touchdowns this season in that category on passes 20 yards or more downfield. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers not being able to throw the deep ball with success is really the story of the season. And much of that has to do with the running game that you mentioned, which is just not experiencing any traction.
the Minnesota Vikings a strong selection there, minus one at 10-11 on the spread. Let's move on to primetime, Gil, and this is a matchup I'm looking forward to. Sunday night football, early hours of Monday morning here in the UK. The Cincinnati Bengals at the Arizona Cardinals. The Bengals 19-10 on the money line. The Cardinals are 10-23, and this spread is currently 5. The Bengals plus 5 at 10-11, the Cardinals minus 5 at 10-11, and the total points line is set at 48.5. The under is 10-11, the over is 10-11. Line movement here, Gil. Prime time Sunday night football. This should be a fantastic match to watch.
For sure, line movement. This opened at 3.5 in favor of the Cardinals. It is at 5 right now. And the reason for that is because the Cincinnati Bengals just absolutely laid an egg on Monday night against the Houston Texans. And just a personal note, not that anyone's interested in my life, but I was in a survivor pool, 1,845 entries. I got down to the final 10. Dave. And then I had the Bengals last week. All they had to do was win. And they destroyed my life on Earth as we know it. So just know that everything I'm about to say is with that bitterness in mind as I talk about the Bengals.
That is sickening, Gil, because the Texans last week really unconsidered outsiders. And for the Bengals, who couldn't get anything going offensively in that match, to allow TJ Yates to orchestrate a drive which led to the DeAndre Hopkins winning touchdown, TJ Yates, Gil. Sorry to rub it in.
T.J. Yates. That's right. I'll always remember T.J. Yates. But, you know, truly, if I had, you know, someone told me before the game, hey, look, the Texans are only going to score 10 points, I would have thought, hey, I'm good.
Yeah.
There's no way the Bengals aren't going to score 10 points at home. But, in fact, Tyler Eifert dropped 3 passes. A.J. Green didn't exist for about 3.5 quarters of that game. And Andy Dalton, who had been going on all cylinders before that game, he had converted 52% of third down throws for firsts prior to that game, 25% in that game. He had been throwing 15.2 yards per attempt through week 9 on balls that traveled more than 10 yards downfield, only 5.8 in that game. The list goes on and on. He had his lowest passer rating of the season, his lowest yardage total, 197, his lowest completion percentage, 57.9. It was just a disaster all around for the Bengals offense. And, you know, I don't know that he's going to get any relief against the Arizona secondary at Arizona. This is not the game. This is not the matchup to get healthy, quote-unquote healthy on immediately. Now, Dalton's had a great season. He and Carson Palmer together have had great seasons, combined 41 touchdowns and 12 picks between them. They both have passer ratings of 104 or higher. They've both been great. But the wheels came off the wagon for the Bengals last Monday night. I don't think that this is the game in which they sort of rebound. I know, again, judging by the theory that you're not as bad as you look any one game, I'm not suggesting the Bengals will be that bad, but the Cardinals are serious, and I don't think giving 5 points is that much. I lean Cardinals here.
We've been focused on that Cincinnati-Houston game from last weekend. We've not talked about Arizona coming out of that bye and beating the Seattle Seahawks in CenturyLink Field last week. The Seahawks clearly not the franchise maybe we anticipated them to be at the start of the season. But I think the scoreline was a lot closer than the game actually was itself. I thought it was a game that Arizona dominated for large periods. And if they hadn't turned the ball over, it could have been a blowout win in Seattle.
Yeah, and, you know, let's talk about Seattle for a second before I get to Arizona. Seattle, it does deserve mentioning that, you know, they're 4-5. They've lost all 5 games this season when leading in the fourth quarter. So as bad as the Seahawks are, they could be very good at just by a break here or there. They just have not been able to close out games. So Arizona going into Seattle and beating them is not to be dismissed easily. Seattle's still a good football team. But Arizona, you know, I think I can spill out all kinds of Carson Palmer stats. First and foremost is he leads the NFL in total QBR, 82.3. He's been the best quarterback in the league. And I think the key has been, and I get this from Mike Sando over at ESPN, who does such great work, he's only allowed 1.6 sacks per game, or he's only been sacked 1.6 sacks per game, even though he's getting blitzed 41.5% of the time. That is the secret sauce. The fact that he has not taken big losses for the Cardinals, even under extreme duress, even in their, under extreme pressure. That's been the key. 23 touchdown passes this year, second in the league. The Cardinals are really good at home. They're 16-4 straight up under Bruce Arians in three seasons. And Carson Palmer has led the offense to 6.5 yards per play. That's the best in the league. 8.6 yards per pass attempt. That's the best in the NFL. Now, Cincinnati has the league's stingiest defense in terms of points per game allowed, 16.9. But this matchup really favors the Cardinals at home to me. I think they have their way in the passing game against Cincinnati's defense. And I think, conversely, Andy Dalton does not have great success against that Arizona pass defense.
Just to pick up on something you were saying about Carson Palmer and him not taking big losses, Gil, that comes with experience. We've got two experienced quarterbacks that maybe haven't been given the respect throughout the years that they deserve. The amount of times I see young quarterbacks in the backfield and they get out of the pocket and instead of just throwing the ball away, they take a sack for a big loss, it's almost inexplicable, and it seems to happen every single week in the National Football League. And maybe that's the panic with not having the experience that the likes of Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton have.
Yeah, I think that's very common among young quarterbacks. You learn a lot about quarterbacks when there's pressure, when they're under duress. Anybody can sit back there protected. If they have 5 seconds, they can throw the ball. All these guys have great arms. Most of these guys have great accuracy. But it's when the pressure comes, their ability to think on their feet, their ability to see the field, and the ability, as you say, not to panic and to make smart plays and to just get to the next down. You know, we don't have to get it all here. Let me just throw this away. Let's go to the next down. That comes with age, but it's a very select group that learns that very early on. Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton really were put under center quickly, and they've learned by fire and now deep into their careers. Carson, very deep into his career. They are showing what they're made of. Carson Palmer, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, period. Andy Dalton, the jury's still out. We'll see if he can win on the stage of the playoffs. And look, in primetime games, Andy Dalton is still 4-8, Dave, 4-8 straight up. So here we have another primetime game, and Andy Dalton's got to prove himself.
Absolutely. Leaning Cardinals there, -5. Against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday night. And we finish the weekend, week number 11, with the Buffalo Bills at the New England Patriots. The Bills 11-4 on the money line. The Patriots 2-7. The Bills +7, 20-21. The Patriots -7 with extra juice here at 20-23. An AFC East matchup to complete the week, Gil. The Bills going to the unbeaten Patriots in what I anticipate to be a bruising clash on Monday night. And the Patriots maintained their perfect season last weekend through the boot of Stephen Gostkowski. He saved them in the dying seconds against the Giants in New York. That win, though, Gil, came at a cost. They've lost Julian Edelman, who has been inspirational for the Patriots so far this season.
He has been inspirational. He's been great. 61 catches. That's a team high. 61 catches, 692 yards, 7 touchdowns. Really, besides Rob Gronkowski, he has been the man in the Patriots offense, with apologies to Deion Lewis as well, who they lost out of the backfield. But really, that's been the story with the Patriots all year. A lot of injuries on the offensive line. I don't know how Bill Belichick's doing it. They've had 19 different offensive line combinations. Really is the genius of Belichick and Brady to work around that. And, you know, I have every bit of confidence that they're going to be able to come up with something here against the Bills, probably put in a couple tight ends, maybe some 3 tight end sets, really protect Brady and come up with a game plan that is going to be able to counter what might have otherwise been a Bill's advantage in this one.
That's the beauty of this Patriots offense under Belichick, that they can utilize different members of the team and still be successful and productive. I suppose the Buffalo Bills will look back to that match, the reverse fixture back in September, where the Patriots won 40-32, and referenced Edelman. He was influential that day. He got a couple of touchdowns and a whole ton of yardage through the air, and think that maybe that's a chink in the Patriots' armour. However, on the flip side of that, Gil, the Patriots were cruising along nicely and maybe got a little bit complacent in that performance and allowed the Bills to rack up a couple of quick points, and maybe the scoreline on that occasion closer than the actual match suggested?
19 unanswered points for the Bills in the fourth quarter of that game. That's what you're referring to. I think you're probably right. I think there might have been a bit of a letdown. Let's give the Bills some credit, though. They certainly came to play that day. But, you know, the Patriots are the one team. This doesn't apply to any other team in the league. They're the one team that really gets it. They know how to game plan from week to week, and it is amazing that they can overcome all of these injuries. And I think, you know, battle of the minds between Belichick and Rex Ryan, I'll take Bill Belichick every single day of the week. And whenever the Patriots are at home, I'm sort of contractually obligated to mention the big stat. The Patriots under Bill Belichick at home as favorites of -7 or less. And once again, they're 7-point favorites right here, 47-21-5 against the spread. And I think that trend continues in the positive for the Patriots on Sunday. You know, the Edelman loss is big. I don't want to minimize that. Danny Amendola is going to have to step up just like he did last week with 10 catches and 79 yards. And, you know, Edelman has been instrumental in the fact that the Patriots have the best third down conversion rate in the NFL at 48.7%. I think Amendola will step in and help Brady out there. But I don't, yet as much as Edelman means, this isn't Rob Gronkowski being hurt. And I just want to point out that Gronkowski is really, besides Brady and Belichick, he is the straw that stirs the Patriots' drink. Gronk, since 2010, Brady, and I get this again from Mike Sando, I want to point out this stat, I want to give him the credit here, Tom Brady has a 6.7 touchdown percentage when Rob Gronkowski has been on the field since 2010. What that means is 6.7% of his passes result in touchdowns with Gronk on the field. Without Gronk, it goes down to 3.4%. So he's the one that makes the huge difference. Everybody else, even Julian Edelman, is replaceable to a degree. So this is not a death blow for the Patriots.
And when I look at this matchup, I think it's imperative that the Bills keep this game close early, because they need to get LeSean McCoy and Carlos Williams going on the ground. I think that's absolutely essential if they're going to win this game. They don't want to be having to play catch-up against the Patriots here.
No, they don't. And I don't want to minimize the Bills. Look, there is a scenario where they can overwhelm this sort of put-together offensive line. You're right, LeSean McCoy and Carlos Williams had a great year. In fact, when Tyrod Taylor, McCoy, Carlos Williams, and Sammy Watkins have all been healthy this year, the Bills are 4-1. The only loss was to the Patriots. And so we will get that quartet healthy for this game. So I don't want to really minimize what the Bills are capable of. They can be a very good football team. I just think they're running up against a different kind of team. The Patriots just deserve a different kind of assessment than any other team from week to week, because I think it's Bill Belichick and then everyone else. He's just smarter than everybody else. And I don't mean to simplify it like to that great of a degree, but oftentimes you can simplify it with this guy. He's just that much better. And while Rex Ryan, as a coach of the Jets, gave him all kinds of trouble in years past, not so sure they can cover the 7 points this time around in a primetime game for the Patriots, who really, as you point out, escaped against the Giants last week. And if you recall back in 2007, they had an escape job midseason against the Ravens that propelled them to an undefeated regular season. I think the Giants game may act as just that this season.
And we have been referencing, or we have talked about, Julian Edelman's injury. It's worth noting that the Bills might be without their safety Aaron Williams and defensive tackle Kyle Williams, so they've got their own problems on that side of the ball.
Yeah, that would be big loss for both for them in both cases, and Lord knows the Patriots are keeping an eye on those injuries.
And the Patriots have won 27 of their last 30 meetings against the Buffalo Bills, which is worth mentioning as well.
And one of those they didn't even try.
Yeah, precisely. That was last year, wasn't it, where they rested a whole bunch of starters in that game. So they gave them one there, Gil.
They gave them one. So it's really 27 of 29. That's right.
Gil, let's get your 5 best picks then. We've completed the look at the televised games this weekend. 5 best bets in the National Football League for week number 11.
Well, we've talked about 3 of them. Now, last week, I went 4-1, and last week I had pretty much all road teams except for the Bengals. And the criticism was, oh, my God, you have all these road teams. Well, the road teams won. It was the home team that lost. This week, I'm awfully chalky, Dave. A lot of favorites. And we talked about three of them, and one of them was the Vikings, just a one-point favorite, so that one barely counts. But I like the Vikings over the Packers for all the reasons we stated. And in the primetime games, I like the home favorites. I like the Cardinals giving 5 against the Bengals, and I like the Patriots giving 7 against the Bills. Again, we went over both of those games. The other two, sort of similar. The Panthers giving 7 at home against the Washington Redskins. Look, Kirk Cousins last week was able to exploit the New Orleans defense. New Orleans defense is awful. They're a sieve. In fact, their defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan, got fired after the game. Now Kirk Cousins has to go up against the Panthers defense, and the story is going to be a whole lot different. Plus, the Panthers running game, which is very solid, is going up against a sieve of a Redskins run defense. So I like the Panthers giving 7 as pick number 4. And then the final pick, as I sit here and stall and try to figure out what that pick was, oh yes, it was the Seattle Seahawks. Again, I'm going with a home favorite giving points. And in this case, the most points on the board, 12.5 in favor of the Seahawks, and I'm giving them. Blaine Gabbert has simply been the worst quarterback in the NFL over the course of his career, and that's a career that has lasted several years now, by any stat. Whether a standard stat or an advanced metric, he's the worst. Now, don't be fooled by their win against the Falcons a couple weeks ago. The Falcons are a soft, soft football team. I think this is the game, and we talked about earlier when we were alluding to the Cardinals win over the Seahawks, how the Seahawks, despite being 4-5, could very well be easily, let's not give them all those 5 losses as wins, but they could very easily be a 7-2 football team conservatively. San Francisco's got the worst offense in the league, 4.8 yards per play, worst passing game in the league, 6.1 yards per pass attempt, and now it's Blaine Gabbert going up against what is still a great Seattle defense at home. I like the Seahawks as pick number 5. So for me, it is the Vikings, the Cardinals, the Patriots, the Panthers, and the Seahawks. Awfully chalky, but I like it this week.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. Make sure you check out all Gil's podcasts, by the way, at Beating the Book, if you want to follow Gil on Twitter. And you can follow myself at D. Kellner. Thank you, folks, for listening to the podcast. Gil, very best of luck with the speech this weekend. I'm sure it will all go swimmingly.
I'm trying to come up with the great balance of funny and sappy, Dave, and it is quite a challenge.
If you need to lean there, go more funny and less sappy, Gil. That would be my advice to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I will do that.
Thank you for your company, Gil. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch up next weekend for week number 12.
Thank you, Dave. Good luck to you as well.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.